Calling all conscious achievers who are seeking more community and connection, I've got an invitation for you. Join me at this year's Summit of Greatness, this September 7th through 9th in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, to unleash your true greatness. This is the one time a year that I gather the greatness community together in person for a powerful, transformative weekend. People come from all over the world, and you can expect to hear from inspiring speakers like Inky Johnson, Jaspreet Singh, Vanessa Van Edwards, Jen Sincero, and many more. You'll also be able to dance your heart out to live music, get your body moving with group workouts, and connect with others at our evening socials. So if you're ready to learn, heal, and grow alongside other incredible individuals in the greatness community, then you can learn more at lewishouse.com/summit2023. Make sure to grab your ticket, invite your friends, and I'll see you there.
When you realize, like, hey, life is already short and fragile, if I'm spending my time cowering in fear or worrying, what you're actually doing is...
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome to this special masterclass. We've brought some of the top experts in the world to help you unlock the power of your life through this specific theme today. It's going to be powerful, so let's go ahead and dive in.
If there were three things that everyone could take away from the Stoics to improve the quality of their life right now, first, what would that be?
I got some good ones. So one of the questions we ask ourselves when we're like afraid of something, when we're thinking about, we go, but what about me? Like, what would I do if, right? Like we're worried. And Marcus Aurelius goes, you'll meet that with the same weapons you've met all your other problems. Mm-hmm. So remembering that, like, hey, you've been scared before and you're still here. Right. So we often what our fear is really doing is underestimating or undercounting how good we actually are right at what we do. Like you're not suddenly tomorrow going to be a helpless loser. You're the same person you are today. Mm-hmm. And what will you do? You'll figure it out. Just like If you quit your job, you'd be like, I'm quitting and I'm going to go find a new job. Mm-hmm. But if you got fired, that suddenly feels like disempowered, whereas the other one feels very empowered. So remembering what you're capable of, mm-hmm. to me, is really important.
Okay, that's one.
Number two, the Stoics say that we should always be training. So one of the reasons I think it's important to have like a physical practice, one of the reasons it's good to seek out adversity and difficulty, is so when stuff happens, you're ready. Epictetus, one of the early Stoics, he's actually a slave, and he says, like, you want to get to a point where when stuff happens, you're able to say, like, this is what I trained for.
Right.
Like, you knew this could happen,
man,
and you did the work.
Yes. Before you go into the next one, it's right when the pandemic happened, I was like, this sucks, and yet I've been training for this for the last, like, 12, 13 years of my life.
Yes.
Because in 2008... In 2007, I got injured and had surgery. And then 2008, the housing crisis, and there were no jobs for someone like me without a college degree that was ignorant from school. I was like, I better develop myself so that when this happens again in 5, 10, 20 years, I'm ready to take on any adversity.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not fun and it's still challenging, but I'm prepared and ready. And I spent 13 years training for that moment. And I felt a sense of, kind of weirdly, I felt a sense of peace that gave me the energy and the clarity to take action and shift where I needed to and lead from a place of courage as opposed to, and I wasn't perfect, but lead from a more calm, peaceful place as opposed to frantic, fearful place.
Well, look, preparation makes you brave,
yes.
Right? You prepared so you were ready. And then I think also because you remembered what you felt then,
oh, man.
You were also in a position to lead and understand what people who were not as prepared
what
needed to hear.
Yeah, what they're experiencing. Yes. It sucks.
Yeah.
So you can have empathy like you talked about. You can connect with people in that way. Okay, so always be training. Always be learning something new. Training yourself physically, mentally, emotionally.
And the third one would be this Stoic exercise of memento mori, which basically means remember you will die. And I actually carry a coin in my pocket that says this. But I think when you realize, like, hey, life is already short and fragile, like, I don't need to, if I'm spending my time cowering in fear or worrying, I'm acting as if I have a certain power over things that I don't. There's this famous Stoic story where, like, the emperor sees this Stoic philosopher he hates, and he's like, I'm threatening you to death, or I'm sentencing you to death. And he's like, I was already sentenced to death.
At some point.
Yeah. He's like, you have no more power over me than I had, than life itself.
Than Mother Nature. Yeah, just
exactly.
Me dying.
And so realizing that life is fragile, I think sometimes people can miss this. Like, memento mori doesn't mean like, don't wear a motorcycle helmet or pretend the pandemic is not real. That's not what it's saying. But it's saying like, hey, focus on the parts of safety and concern that are in your control. But if you're wasting your time being afraid, that's something I thought a lot about in the pandemic. It's like, look, I don't know, especially early on, we don't know where this is going, don't know what it means, don't know what is ticking clock is in anyone's body, right? What pre-existing condition you might have or bad piece of luck you got. So you take it seriously. But within that, what are you doing with your time, right? Like, what are you going to spend your time on? Mm-hmm. So if you're spending that time worrying, stressing,
watching the news all day,
what you're actually doing is rejecting the life that you have in front of you in this moment.
It's kind of like a longer eclipse. Like there's an eclipse that's happening. We don't know what this is, but you could sit there and worry and fear for those 5 minutes of the eclipse or whatever, or you can look up and enjoy it and do something with your time and make the most of this and prepare and strategize and organize your time.
Yeah. James Stockdale, who spent 7 years in a prison camp in Vietnam, who reads the Stoics, he says, he gets there and he goes, I never lost sight of the fact that I controlled the end of the story. Mm. Right? So if he got out, that he would control the end. He would decide what he said. And that I could turn this into something that in retrospect I would not have traded for.
And isn't that crazy?
That's incredible.
It's like Mandela as well. It's like 25 years or something.
So I think it takes courage to say, this thing happened to me. and I wouldn't have chosen it. I didn't want it. But now that it's here, I'm going to face it. I'm going to apply all my training and experience towards it. And then I'm not going to waste my life being bitter, resentful, afraid, passive about it. And I'm just going to get to work turning it into something.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this is 100% true or accurate, but I heard someone say that Bhutan is like the happiest country. I'm not sure if you've heard of this. It's because, I don't know if everyone does this or just some people do this there, they focus on their death 5 times a day.
Interesting.
They think about their death 5 times a day. And so there's an app, I think it's called Croaked, something like that, where 5 times a day, I had it for a while, it sends you a reminder, you're going to die, with an inspiring quote that has you reflect on your death 5 times a day to remind yourself. Do you have this on your phone?
No. Did I give you one of these?
This coin
is what I carry in my pocket.
Yeah. Let me see. Oh, nice.
You should just carry that. It's like a nice weight. So I spin it. And the idea is...
You could leave life right now.
And the rest of that quote, so Mark Sweeney says, you could leave life right now. And then he says, let that determine what you do and say and think. And so to me, the power of meditating on your death is that it puts everything in perspective, right? It doesn't make things meaningless. It actually makes them meaningful because it says like, if this doesn't matter, I shouldn't be doing it. And if it does matter, I should be doing it as if it is the last time that you get to do it.
Right.
Like, I think one of the things, I don't know about you, but like as like an ambitious or driven person, I find myself like rushing a lot, right? Like, got to go here, got to go there. This is taking too long. I don't want to wait. I even found myself like my son, he often like naps in the car. So it's like, you're in the car as long as he's asleep. And I'll find myself like, you're behind a slow driver. Oh, and you're like, I got to get around this. And then I'm like, but I'm not going anywhere, right? Like I'm rushing. And so what I've started to remind myself is like, what are you rushing towards? You're rushing towards death, right? Not just because speeding is unsafe, but you're rushing towards, like as you're rushing out of a moment, you're rushing away from life. Seneca talks about, he says, don't think of death as happening in the future. Think of death as happening right now.
Really? Why?
And the time says, because the time that passes belongs to death, right? Like, so when you die, you're like, you've lived 80 years, but you've also, that's 80 dead years that can never come back. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the time that passing as being death happening, like you're every minute you're getting closer to death. You don't want to rush through a moment. You want to fully experience the moment.
Even if you're waiting in line or behind a car or impatient.
This is life. And when you're rushing away from it or you're rushing toward death. Wow. And so you slow down and you go, okay, I've been alive 34 years.
Right.
What do I have to, was I alive for 34 years?
Or was I rushing?
Right. Or was I rushing away to get to 35? But maybe I die at 35, right? You don't know. So if you just go like, the present is here, I'm going to be controlled enough and courageous enough to just, this is enough. This is it. Doesn't need to be anything or anywhere else. I'm just going to be here and I'm not going to rush away. And kids have really been helpful for this because you're like, oh, not only am I rushing potentially like towards death, but you're at the very least, they will never be this age again. So as you're trying to get this over with, you have to intellectually
miss those years.
Yeah. And eventually you'll be like, oh, if only they were 5 again. Right? Like, when they were 5, you wanted it to be over. And so
the screaming, the crying, the pooping or whatever it is, it's like, oh, I wish they could do this on their own, but you'll look back and
you don't really want that.
Yeah.
So
you want them to stay there forever. You're like, I'm gonna capture this moment.
Yeah. And this is true even for the shitty stuff. Like even when you're stuck in traffic, even when you're home with the flu,
so true. It's like, I don't know if you think about this. I mean, you've always just been like talented and successful your entire life, unlike me, where I struggled and went through pain for years. But I feel like, especially the years after my dream was over playing football, and I was like, well, who am I? What is my identity? What is the value I add to the world if this was my value? How can I, you know, just survive and thrive in this world without that value or identity anymore? I remember just being in a state of uncertainty for a while and wanting to get out of it, wanting to have a job, wanting to launch a business, wanting to have money, wanting to have an audience, wanting to have a book, all these different things, wanting to have something. And when I look back and I'm like, man, those moments were really meaningful of what I was living and learning moment and day by day. The struggle, the pain, the adversity. Like, I'm recreating that in other ways just by trying to get to the next level, but I'll never live that aspect, those moments again, the specific time.
Well, and when you got those things, was it as magical as you thought it would be? It never is.
I mean, it wasn't as fulfilling. It was cool to see like a full circle and reflect back, but it was never like, oh, this is, I've made it, you know?
You never feel like you've made it. And so that, like, I talk about this a little bit in some of my stuff where, like, what will happen is you get to the medal stand, right?
Right.
New York Times bestseller, Olympic gold medal, you know, All-American, whatever the thing is, right? And there's an anticlimacticness to
it. After 10 minutes, you're like, now
what? You talk about this in the School of Greatness. Yes. You're like, now what? So the problem is people can learn. You can go two ways. You feel the now what. So you can go, now, oh, I got to find something really meaningful.
I got to go bigger.
Well, no. So you either you look at that and you're like, oh, it was never about accomplishments. Uh-huh. It was always about being present and meaning and connection and the friends you made along the way.
Right.
Or you go, oh, it's that I have to do it again. Or, oh, it wasn't $1 million. It was $1 billion.
Yeah.
And so you can see why that moving of the goalposts creates really successful people. But they are rarely happy people.
Happy or fulfilled.
Yes.
Or peaceful inside.
Yes. And I think it's the journey I'm on, what I'm trying to do. I would like to be proof that it is possible to be world class at what you do and come from a place of contentment and fullness, not being like, I just need this, then I will be good. Because you're never, ever good.
There's always going to be some writer better than you or someone that writes a book in a way that's different than you or some whatever. This could be someone more talented, more successful,
I remember the
richer. You know.
Of course. I mean, you meet someone. There's a story about Joseph Heller and Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut wrote Slaughterhouse-Five. Joseph Heller wrote Catch-22, two of the great writers of the 20th century. And they're at this party, and you've been at parties like this, mm-hmm. where like you're at a much richer person, right? Yeah. Like one of those, you're like, why am I even here?
Yeah.
And Kurt Vonnegut is teasing Joseph Heller, and he says, like, you know, this guy made more money this week than your book will make in its entire life.
Right.
And he says, yeah, but I have something he doesn't have.
What's that?
And he's like, what could that possibly be? And he says, I have enough.
Ooh.
And...
Ooh.
And it's not that guy just wrote Catch-22 and then he sat on it. He wrote other great stuff. He did great work. He just wasn't coming at it from a place of craving. Like, you know, we had that word thirst. Like, he wasn't thirsty. He was quenched, but he was doing it because he actually liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time one of my books hit number one, I was mowing the lawn at my house. And my agent, Steve, called me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, now I have to finish mowing this lawn. You know, like it was like...
You're like,
it was
okay, like, at a 10-minute moment, yeah, I'm still here, like pushing this thing.
And then you realize like, oh, it's never going to be... I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but I didn't think it was going to be that. And I feel grateful that I didn't think, oh, I have to have back-to-back number ones. Mm-hmm. That will be it, you know?
It's interesting. I remember Steve, when Steve called me, because we had the same agent, and when I hit I didn't hit number one, but I hit the New York Times bestseller list. And I remember for like... an hour just being like, wow, this is something I dreamed about. But then after an hour, like calling everyone and being like, congratulations, I was like, did anything change? Like nothing really changed. I accomplished
a thing.
Yeah, there wasn't like opening up the gates and money dropping down or people calling me. It's like a few people noticed and a few, okay, you do one post on Instagram and then people compliment and then people move on.
Well, so on
and
this,
time moves on, you know, it's.
On this book, I'm actually thinking about that because you know, when you do a book, there's this whole lane of prioritization of like, how do you get on the list?
Yes.
And it takes a lot of your time and energy.
Man.
And why do you do it? It's obviously there's some business reasons, but part of it is, if not ego, it's this like people said that's important. So you're like, that's as good a target as any. on this one, and I'm a little bit of a thing with my publisher where I'm like, no, I just want to like get as many books in people's hands as possible. So I'm like ignoring all that. But there is a kind of a fear there because it's like, man, the one benefit of that strategy is that the success is clear and objective and recognizable by other people.
Yes.
So like the book's going to come out. I know it's doing well. I already know the track that it's on, but like, I'm not saying I'm going to get condolences, but there are people who are going to be like, oh, I guess it didn't work as well. You know, like, so
it's kind of been like all your books. They like didn't hit right away. It's like 2 years later. Now it's number one. It's crushing.
Just the idea of like, hey, you have to determine what success is to you and to not base it on what other people like.
That's so hard. That's courage.
It's hard to do.
I tell you what, for me, the last 2 years, I've been working on developing a new book, but I've also been like, gosh, do I do the traditional publisher thing? And I've been having these conversations, but I'm like, I just want to let that go and just write a good book that people are impacted by.
Right.
But it's like, oh, do you worry about, you know, the advance and what people are going to ask you about it? Or do you not care about that at all?
Yeah.
Self-publish it and just try to help as many people as possible. Is there a balance? And literally, it has been holding me back until in the last like 6 weeks, for the last couple of years, I've been in this limbo. I think one, because I've been trying to like build my business in the pandemic and shifting. But this has been on my mind, this conversation, for 2 years during all this. And it's not until now where I'm just like, okay, I need to get clear and I just need to take action and do it from the highest level place possible. Do things that are smart as well for business, but also just do what's going to help as many people.
Well, it's a safety net, right? Yeah. To do it, to do the conventional, like this is how it's done, is safer because like then no one's going to be like, what an idiot.
Right.
Or like,
oh, he's falling off the wagon.
He's a loser. It didn't work. You know, he's on the decline.
Yeah.
And so the decision to like do stuff that you care about, that requires sort of like burning the boats behind you and just going like, I'm on this journey. And I think it's particularly hard in today's world where, you know, there's view counts and likes. Like there's so much more public quantification of what's done. And like when I talk to sports teams, I sometimes say that I'm a little bit jealous. So it's like, it's obvious whether they're doing a good job or not.
You're jealous?
I love the clarity of sports. Like lose.
Win, loss,
how
track
many points,
and field, yes.
Stats.
Did you get the height or not? Yes.
But the reality is, in the world that the rest of us exist in,
it's like a committee and how many people like it and who you're following.
You're running your own race. Yeah. Like, you have to decide what success is.
I know.
And that means criticizing yourself when you fall short of your own metrics. And it also means congratulating yourself on a success that perhaps other people don't recognize.
Right.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The success could be just, I'm proud of this chapter I wrote in this week or this month, even though no one's going to be see it.
Yeah.
No one's like buying this, but I'm proud of the work that I'm putting in, the effort, the energy, the process.
I've tried to get to, I would say that on my first book, I was 10%, this is a success because I made it and it was the best I was capable of. And 90%, let's see what the results are. Like, let's see how it does. And I would like to think that as I've gone forward, that slowly flipped. And that I'm now 90, it's already a success because it exists.
Even if no one buys this, I
it's
put
my
the
best
effort
work.
In. Yeah, yeah.
And then 10% like bonus, like, hey, it worked, won awards, got recognition.
But isn't it the, like we talked about in the beginning, there's kind of like 3 levels to like a book. There's the mastery of writing the book, which you've become one of the greatest writers of our time. And distilling wisdom, ancient wisdom, and creating practical examples on how you can actually do this for today's life. And millions of people have read your books. But you could master writing the book, but you also have to master doing the marketing and promotion and now putting yourself out there and communicating it. And then master being patient. Of like,
yeah.
Maybe you put out the great book and no one cared about it right now for a few years, but then you'd be patient and people start buying it.
Well, I think you want to rank them. So the Stoics say that their first task in life, the most important task in life, is what is up to me and what is not up to me. Like separating things into the category of, is it in my control? Is it not in my control? So as I look at like any project or business or whatever, I prioritize based on like what's most in my control to what's least in my control. So like the first mastery of the thing itself, like, is it the best album, the best video, the best, you know, live event it could possibly be? You have as much control over that as you're going to have of anything, because that's yours. So like there you have the ability to get most of the win before it's even out. Then marketing and promotion and communicating and talking about it, that's like more something you have influence over as opposed to something you control. Right? Because it's like, what's happening in the world? You know, like how on point or trend is your thing?
Right.
You know, are you, but it's also, are you willing to put in the time? Are you willing to, so many people just think they're better than that. And so they don't do it. And then the third part is the patience or the time, or it's like, you gotta, the audience will like it. You imagine you're Herman Melville, you write Moby Dick, it gets savaged. Everyone's like, this is not just not good. This is
horrible. Yeah, yeah.
You should be, we're offended that you did it. And then only like towards the end of your life and after your life, does it finally get the recognition you deserve. So that part's the least in your control. And you have to be somewhat detached from that.
Right.
Because if you wake up every day and you're like, is this the day that people finally recognize me for all my contributions? You have handed your happiness over.
Right.
To something that's not up to you.
It's true. It's funny, as you were saying that, I grew up in a religion called Christian Science that a woman discovered this religion and wrote a book called Science and Health.
Yeah.
And this is the same time back in the late 1800s when Mark Twain was around. And they were kind of like frenemies, I guess. And Mark Twain wrote an entire book trashing this woman, Mary Baker Eddy, and her findings of you know, the science behind healing. It was essentially like the science of Jesus's healing.
Okay.
Here's how it works. Here's how the mind works and how we can heal ourselves. And he wrote an entire book bashing her and the religion called Christian Science, which was like this critical of her work because she kept writing the same book with expanded updates every year, like so many different editions of the same book.
Yeah.
And it kept hitting number one. And he had to write new books all the time.
Right.
So I think he was just frustrated that this woman kept writing the same book over and over with,
sure,
like, here's more finding and research and science of,
right,
how the mind and body is healed through the,
yeah,
mind. And it's funny, like, she just kept going because she was focused on the work and healing people one at a time and the message spread. But I think it's interesting that put a reason that came up for me because the more you put your work out there, the more criticized it's going to be open to. You know, there's more people are going to be willing to criticize it. And I think a lot of people aren't ready for criticism. They're not trained to deal. No one teaches you how to deal with criticism when you have an audience.
No, no one teaches, because it's a champagne problem that a lot of people never get to.
Yes.
So there's not like a lot of instructions,
uh-huh,
but it is inevitable. And like, you have to realize, I've realized a couple things. One is like, critics are almost always louder than your fans. Like, people who dislike something are much louder than the people who are like,
why,
oh,
is
that's
that
pretty good?
Why is that?
I think it's one feels more strongly than the other. Like, the stuff I like, I'm like, cool.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but then when you really hate something, you're like, I need them to suffer how I am suffering. So a lot of times I think you're just different levels of enthusiasm.
So when was the moment then where you were able to look at yourself and realize I have either conquered this inner rage, beast, whatever you want to call it, and you do have control?
Well, I have to go, now we go flash forward.
Yes.
Okay. My wife and I had been through, you know, first of all, in 2010, it was the end of our marriage. We had been married 20 years.
Wow.
And, you know, this whole time I had had an addiction to pornography,
mm-hmm,
and I had never told her. And 10 years earlier, I had, you know, basically cheated on her at a, mm-hmm, massage parlor.
Right.
But I vowed I'd never tell anybody. I vowed. I said, man, I'm taking this to my grave. It's not happening. But see, you got to understand another thing, too, is there's this competition, but also this guilt that I was always carrying created
because
rage.
Because of that. Yeah, yeah. Because
creates
of that.
Rage.
Yeah, of course. And shame.
Shame. I used to get into arguments. So she asked me questions like, do you watch porn? Or something? Hey, no, don't even bring that up. What are you talking about? You know what? No, listen, I don't know who you think you are. And start an argument, so, mm-hmm, she'd be like, I'm out, just so she wouldn't bring up more, because I knew what I was doing.
Right.
And I knew that I wasn't living right. I mean, the one thing is, it's almost like, you know, you say one lie,
mm-hmm,
and it turns into two, turns into 10.
And it eats you inside of you, too.
You're talking about 10 years. Now, I vowed I would never tell anybody, and my wife was always like, she would just bring up stuff like, what is it? What are you doing, man? I don't know. You ever cheat on me? Stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, and angry. And what you would do, and one thing that I would do is project.
Of course.
So I was like, why are you saying that? Are you thinking about cheating? You know, in turn, and again, this manipulative game that you could play with the people you love,
right,
the people who love you, or you claim to love, just so you can keep your thing together. You know what I mean? And this is the thing, Lewis, is that I realized that the image of Terry Crews was more important than who Terry Crews was.
Dang.
And I had to worship that image.
Who?
And it ran everything.
Because what would happen if who Terry Crews was really came out instead,
right,
of the image? What would happen then?
Well, my mindset, I had a play. I was like, I'd lose everything. First of all, my wife would leave. People who knew me would be ashamed. People who knew me they would run away. Everybody would be done. All of it would be finished. Every bit of who I, you know, if people found out who I really, really was, or what I was really, really thinking and contemplating, how I had done, then it would be the end of me.
Wow.
So I decided and we're gonna put this image up and we're gonna prop it up. Mm-hmm. And it's like having an image on these really weak posts. You know what I mean? It would get bumped and it's like way swaying and you're doing everything you can to hold it. I gotta put another beam up on there just to hold it up because it's getting rickety. Mm-hmm. And the longer it goes, the more rickety it gets. And it all fell, 2010.
Wow.
And my wife was like, I'm out. I'm done. And because what happened was she finally asked me, because we had just been getting farther and farther apart over the years. And she said, you know, what is it I don't know about you, Terry Crews? And I told her. I told her about what happened 10 years earlier. Now, in my head, I'm like, hey, that was 10 years ago. But for her, it was today. Mm. And she was like, I'm out.
Wow.
Don't come home. And what I realized is that she had married an image. And what she realized is that she didn't know me.
Right.
She was like, who are you? And I let her stay in that. And one thing about men is that what we're looking for is intimacy. Like, literally someone who knows us inside and out and loves us anyway. But if you never reveal who you really are, you can never, ever have intimacy.
Amen to that.
You understand what I mean? Man. You can't. It's impossible. Because you have to know who you are.
Absolutely. You have to share who you are.
But the game is not to share who you
are. Right.
So you can have sex all day. Mm-hmm. Lots of sex. Because that's still part of the image. But it doesn't have anything to do with intimacy.
Right.
Anything to do with someone. This is why you always love your mom. Because your mom knows who you are.
Right, right. Everything.
Everything. You know what I mean? She cleaned your nose. Yeah, she wiped your butt. She knows when you lie. She knows the bad you. She knows the good you.
Yeah.
And she loves you anyway. That's why your mom is queen of the world. Mm-hmm. But you didn't tell everything to this chick.
No.
To this lady. Hell yeah. To your wife. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God. And dude, years of therapy. I finally went in to deal with these issues, man. Mm. Now, the thing about in my culture, where I grew up,
no one does therapy.
The mind was, you can't cure crazy. Mm. That was the phrase that was said. Hey, you can't cure crazy. And then you're talking about in religious circles, they were like, oh, you're going to get them demons. The demons are going to come if you go to that psychology. They're going to mess with your brain and make you crazy. So my father, there was one time my father went to a psychologist to get help for his alcoholism. And a week later, the psychologist jumped off a bridge. Oh, and I was like, what?
Wow.
Huh?
Oh, man.
He jumped off a bridge, man. And I said, okay, that don't work. That's not going to work. Oh, so, man. No. And I thought these guys were going to make me crazy. So that was the thing. Like, when that broke for me, when my wife left, I was at my wits end. Like, I said, man, I got to try this therapy stuff. You know, because I'd heard enough about it over the years.
What was the greatest lessons therapy has taught you, though?
Man, assembly required. Okay? When I say this, we all think we as men or people are as good as we are. We just take me as I am. We make songs about it. Mm-hmm. Take me just as I am. No. But the problem is, this thing is, it's like, it's not anybody else's job to assemble you. You are like Legos, okay? Legos come in a box. You shake the box, it's just pieces. And in a very competitive world, people tell you, you're broke. Hey man, look at your box. You broke it. But what I learned is that you're not broken. You're just not finished. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to assemble yourself. You have to work on you. You have to take off parts that are bad or broke or that don't fit. Because nothing's broken. It's just things don't fit. And you pull it off and you put it back together the right way. It's like when you go, but you got to go deep and you got to go down with computers. Yeah. It's a bit with property or the minerals, it's atoms. Mm-hmm. And with human beings, it's genes. I mean, it's down into the core. You get one little gene and you can rebuild yourself. That's what I got from therapy. I was like, holy cow, you can take the bad out. It's not automatic. Man. You know, a lot of people have said, it's either nature versus nurture. But nurture always works. No matter what your nature started out as. You understand what I mean? Like, nurture is, you're in the woods. Like, nature is you born naked in the woods. But nurture is you learn to make a coat and put it on.
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying? You can build a house.
Why do you think it's so hard for us to be 100% authentic in relationships?
Yeah. If you would ask somebody about your characteristics, like your personality, for instance, what your strengths might be, that's what you've come across that you feel as if is a good machinery to make it in this life, right? So this is like, you know, maybe I'm charismatic, maybe I'm hardworking, maybe I'm analytical, maybe I'm, you know, competitive, maybe I'm these ways. Somewhere along the lines of your life, you realized this would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. This gets me a little further forward.
Gets all me of result. These elements. Yeah.
Very good. So then there I am in life being this way. And the more successful it is, the more I'm going to be this way. So now I'm more and more and more like this to the point where there's no distinction between this thing and me. Like, we're the same now. It's this, there's no line anywhere. It's just all how you would explain yourself now. What you also realize, though, is that those ways don't work everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people call imposter syndrome is basically just the realization that your shtick don't stick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, my stuff don't work here. And so people are like, oh, well, I feel like I'm an imposter. Well, you are in many ways, but not in the way you might think. You are an imposter. There's a you there doing another you. But behind that you really is you.
So how do we get behind that you? How do we break down the thing that's been working for so long, but maybe won't continue to work in the next evolution?
If I'm, for instance, competitive, right, and it's a trait of mine, and it's stood me in good stead, and I've created a life from that, and maybe some success from that, or in my case, hardworking, right? But it could be other things. It could be analytical, and it could be... And this is obviously a kind of... These are ways of being. This is an ontological element, right? Or the element of being a human being. So if I'm competitive, I can point to all the places where that's really done me well, right?
Sports and...
Maybe, or maybe I'm in sales, right? Or maybe I'm, you know, like I'm building my own business, right? I mean, this is a strength here, right? Yeah, try taking that home.
In relationships, it doesn't work.
It's a crap show, right? Like, it's like, this is not going to work for me.
You know what's fascinating? I would say I defined my identity, a piece of my identity, most of my life as a competitor.
Yeah.
Right? Being in sports and using sports as a tool to make myself feel better, to prove the bullies wrong from childhood, all those things, and say, I'm going to make something of myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to win at all costs in sports and things like that. I started early in my 20s to translate that into business, and it worked in a sense.
Yes.
But it left me feeling more, I don't know, against people than it was with people.
All right, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Right, so there you are, and you were having an experience that this competitiveness actually wasn't working for you.
Right,
it wasn't. Right,
It was getting results in some way, but not results in the other ways.
Right, and so you're starting to see something there, though, that's really interesting to me, and that is, here you are being yourself,
right.
But hold on a minute. Is this myself?
And why am I suffering inside? And why am I going through these challenges?
Right. So I want to know is, what's the thing that's suffering then? Like, what's that?
Yeah, I guess it was the identity that this isn't working. Like, who I am or the way I'm being isn't working fully. It's working partially to get certain results, but it's not creating peace inside.
All right. So I would flip it the other way. I would flip it the other way. Look at it from the other direction. That is... It's fine for this competitive expression, but not okay for you.
Absolutely.
And it's the you, that you, that I'm interested in. I'm interested in that. Because that thing right there, what matters to that thing? And so you actually pointed to it. So the thing that mattered to you then was people.
Absolutely.
But you see how like that competitiveness was now the barrier between you
absolutely
and people.
Each moment is an opportunity to detour into fear, and then we create a world of fear-based perceptions. Mm. And so what we must do to live and thrive and feel good is undo those fear-based perceptions. And I believe through a spiritual path or through maybe a therapeutic path, I mean, I think spirit's in all of it, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah.
But to make a commitment to feel better, it means that you're committed to returning to God.
Mm.
Or love, or you know, spirit,
the universe,
whatever
or,
you
yeah.
call it, yes.
You also talk about how we have guides. And it's funny because my girlfriend, who's amazing, and she'll always tell me, she's like, you know, your angels are always watching you.
Yeah, she's a spiritual being, right?
She's like,
I can see it.
I have there's angels that are always supporting me whenever I'm in trouble. I'm like focused on my angels. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where are these angels? Like, how do we know they're here? Who are these guides? Like, how can we tap into this belief that there are, whether it's our ancestors, spiritual beings, whatever it may be, are here with us, are guiding us.
We're talking about this on the School of Greatness.
Protecting us, are leading us into a path of love.
Yeah. So what I write about in my book is what I believe, and I always have a big disclaimer that says, this is an opportunity to crack you open to believing something new, and if it's not for you, you choose how you choose to perceive this. Mm-hmm. So not only do I talk about spirit guides and angels and deceased family members, but I also talk about your higher self. So if this is too woo-woo for you, start to tap into what is the voice of my higher self.
Gotcha.
Right? That voice of my inner guidance system and that wisdom that I believe in is my true nature, right? But I personally, Gabby Bernstein, I believe that we all have guides, ancestors, family members, teachers, beings of light beings, energy beings that are supporting us in a form that is able to step in, able to channel through us when we write books, able to be there in those darkest moments, pick us up off the floor, and hold us in discomfort and guide us to business opportunities or babies or whatever it is that we're looking for. And it's always available to us, that guidance, but we cut it off, we block it.
And why so do we block the guidance?
Fear is the reason we block it. Fear.
Fear of what?
It's not even fear. It's that false-based perception that we've built up around ourselves from those traumatic events, right? So we have these traumatic events early in life, and they continue to build and build and build. We build up a world of false perceptions. I am this body. I am Gabby Bernstein. Mm. I am Lewis Howes. I've got the School of Greatness.
People are
I'm
out
a
to
New
get
York
me.
Times
no, I can't trust people. We create these beliefs.
And you believe you're separate from others. You believe you're better than or less than or not good enough. And all those stories, all those false pretenses are what many spiritual practices call the ego, right? And that fear-based perception of yourself is misaligned with God, with love, with spirit, with angels, with guides. And so this book is all about how to get back into alignment so that you can hear that guidance and receive that guidance and be a channel for inspiration. And when you clear and undo those patterns of fear and start to claim the pattern of love, that's when you are hooked up, super attractor.
Unstoppable.
Invisible doors open for you. It doesn't matter how low you are when you're starting this, you will go way further than you could possibly have imagined. And I am standing behind that subtitle, Methods for Manifesting a Life Beyond Your Wildest Dreams.
Mm.
Standing behind it.
I love that. What's the difference between spiritual guides or guides and intuition?
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app, State Farm, lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You could call it the same thing. Your guides are your bridge from your fear-based thoughts back to your love, right? So if you pray and say, God, guide, higher self,
angels, whatever.
I give this to you. Figure it out, right? I don't know I'm going to get through this time, but yeah, I give it to you. That's how we surrender. People are like, I don't know how to surrender. I don't want to let it go. I don't know how to. Through prayer. Okay, prayer is the conduit. And then when we say that prayer or that intention, whatever you want to call it, and we allow ourselves to give it over to a higher power of our own understanding, a guide, God, spirit, grandma, whoever, then we're taking that difficult experience, we're handing it over, and then we relax.
Yeah.
Because we think, okay, it's not on my shoulders anymore.
It's like taking our ego out of ourself and putting it over here and saying, someone else
is
going to
help me undo this. And then their job is to pay attention. What's going to show up for us? And so
How do we pay attention?
Just be aware, stay calm, and stay chill, right? And be conscious of how things start to speed up, or the synchronicities that begin to happen around you. Or if you are like, you know, guides, I want to see a sign, and you're like, I need butterflies, and butterflies are everywhere.
Right.
And I'm getting thousands and thousands of emails from readers that are reading this book in the last 2 weeks it's been out. And they're just like, Gabby, every single sign I've asked for is coming to me. And like, it just speeds up. Ask for a sign today. If you're having a difficult experience, say, guides, what would your sign be? Don't think, just say it. Just say it, don't think.
Oh, the sign itself?
Like a pumpkin or anything.
An eagle.
Eagle is your sign. That's a good one. It's strong.
Yeah.
See how he answered that? It's got to be the first thing that comes to mind. And now, if there's an issue that's happening in your life, just say to yourself silently today at the end of this podcast, just say, thank you, guides, thank you, universe, whatever you believe in, right? For showing me my eagle to remind me that I'm on the right path.
So ask for the sign, the eagle.
Thank you for revealing my eagle.
Thank you for revealing it before I see the eagle.
Yeah, thank you for revealing my eagle to remind me that I am being guided.
Okay.
Okay.
And the eagle will mean whatever I give the meaning to, whether it's to make a decision on something.
If it's just being guided in general, or if it's being guided towards that job or that healing or that whatever, right? Sometimes I'll use a sign like, am I supposed to take this deal and I don't know what to do and I'm feeling so uncomfortable about it. And I'll say, show me a sign and I'll get this. And the thing is, if you don't get your sign, that's a sign too. But you absolutely will get your sign. If you're asking to be shown that you're being guided, 100% you're going to get your sign.
Okay.
Lewis is going to text me later, everybody.
It's on the eagle.
My eagle! Just send me a photo of like some massive eagle.
So give me an example for people.
It could be an eagle like in a photo or an eagle, you know,
any
on a
image
napkin.
Not some eagle sitting on my window, which would be amazing if that happened.
Could be that too.
Let's give an example example for someone. Say someone says there's a female listening or a male listening and saying, okay, should I go on a date with this person?
Yeah.
A second date with this person, right? Yeah. Just something small.
Show me my sign. Yeah.
And what if you don't see, and the sign is to reveal that you're supposed to go on this date or to give you some
guidance. If you don't get the sign, then, and you decide to go on the date anyway, it's okay. There's still some learning in that.
Yeah.
There might be an opportunity. There have been times where I've done things where I didn't get my sign, and they didn't work out necessarily, but I still learned something from the experience.
Has there ever been a time where you didn't see a sign and it did work out? Maybe you saw the sign later or something.
It worked out in a different way, right? So like if I was like, I need a sign about this situation and I didn't get the sign. Oh, here's an example from the book. Mm-hmm. So I was, my 2 weeks before I was meant to conceive, my doctor, who was like a very conservative Yale-trained physician in my little tiny country town, was like, I just turned 39. I was 38 when I was pregnant and I just turned 39. So he considered me 40. Okay. I was like, dude, I was 38 a week ago and now I'm fucking 40. So he makes me 40. And he's like, we believe that you need to deliver 40 weeks at when you're 40 years old. And I was resisting. And I was like, I'm not 40 and I don't want to be induced and I don't want to force the baby out. I don't want to have that kind of thing. And I was so torn up because he was so nervous and that was infiltrating my fears.
Yeah.
And so I was in his office and I was like, okay, universe, I can't make the decision. I need a sign. And so I said, show me a sign if following this path is the right move. And he walked in the door and he was wearing this necktie. And I said, Howie, what's on your tie? And he said, it's a cardinal. And I said, okay. In my head, I'm like, that's my sign. It's a cardinal. And so the next day I had to make a decision if I wanted to get booked. So I didn't have an opportunity to see my cardinal before I made that quote, that decision, because I had to book him in the schedule. And he was leaving the next week. It was a mess. So I made the decision without seeing the sign. I said, to be induced, to schedule an induction.
Wow.
It's not what I wanted. And so I made that decision. I was in my bath. I texted my girlfriend. I said, okay, I'm going to be induced. This is happening. And she writes back to me, that's a great decision. I feel really good about it. And I know it's good for you because I saw a cardinal land on my window now. Cardinal landed
on my window. No way. Did you tell her the sign?
She had no idea about the sign.
Wow.
But here's the thing. So I got my cardinal. It gave me the guidance that I was on the right path. I was meant to be induced on a Wednesday. On a Monday, I'm lying in my bed and I'm finishing the finishing touches of the book because I wanted to deliver the book before I delivered the baby. Right. So I stand up to go to the bathroom and my water breaks.
No way.
And then here I am and I have the most epic Beyonce birth. Like there was nobody at the hospital. I had like rolling hills out my window and like I was the only one birthing in the maternity ward.
Oh my gosh.
And I had, you know, the sun setting. So the whole point is that my sign was saying, yeah, you're on the right track. Make the decision so that I could relax. Mm-hmm. Because if I hadn't made that decision,
stressed,
I wouldn't have relaxed. My water wouldn't have broke because I would have been too freaked out and tense. And everything worked out.
Wow.
Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah, of course.
So if you don't see your sign, that's still guidance. And then, you know, if you get your sign, even if it's something you didn't want, you know?
What has been the biggest lesson of motherhood that you were unexpectedly, because you have lots of friends who are mothers.
Yeah, I had no idea.
You have so many fans of yours who are moms that you speak to all the time, and maybe you thought you knew what they were going through. You could speak into some of their challenges, but what have you really learned? Maybe three biggest lessons so far about motherhood and what moms experience.
Yeah.
In the first year of motherhood.
So in terms of what moms experience and what happens, and I think my son has given me the greatest gift of healing I could ever have imagined.
Really?
Because as soon as I became pregnant, what happens for women is all your shit comes up, and for men too.
Oh yeah.
You know, when you're like about to bring life into the world and be responsible for that life, your darkest demons start to come to the surface, and so many people just push it down. And so I don't push things down. I was like, let's go. Okay, I'm ready. I'm willing. Let's go for this. And so I worked out along the way, and then the postpartum, and that gave me even a greater step of healing. So his presence in my life has already put me on a massive healing path. I've had, you know, fast forward healing in the last year and a half. So that I'm grateful.
Wow.
My son has taught me that I am going to make my highest priority in life to honor his feelings. People keep asking me, like, what's your parenting advice? I'm like, look, I've been doing this for 10 months, but I can tell you this. Honor their feelings. Imagine that was something that we experienced.
Amazing.
I mean, you'd be a different person. I'd be a different person. And if we could honor any human's feelings, any human being, particularly a child. And then I guess the third thing that I've learned as a mother, there's so much, but is that they have their own guides. They have their own, this is big. He is not my son, Oliver Rocklin. He is not, you know, the son to Zach, the son to Gabby. He is his own spirit having a human experience.
Wow.
And he is a person. He's not a baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're just here to guide him.
I am in a archetypal position to be a guide and a love and a support for him. But I find myself often being like, my baby is so cute. My baby. And then I have to stop myself and say, Oliver. Not my baby. He's not my baby. He's him.
Wow. So when we reflect our judgment on someone else, we don't like something, we're angry at them, we're pissed off at them, whatever it is, how can we shift that to see the good in them?
Read Judgment Detox.
Okay.
Because sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I wrote a book about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean,
I get it.
But I'll answer your question fully right now, which is like, when we are in judgment of somebody else, what's happening is that we're projecting onto them our own wounds.
Gosh.
And so the second step of Judgment Detox is to, the first step is
heal your wounds.
Is to honor your wounds.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
You know,
so hard to not judge other people, isn't it?
Gets a lot of, it gets easier when you practice it. Helped me so much. And do I not judge all the time? Of course, I still judge. But when I judge, I don't believe in it.
Mm.
And I get out of it quickly.
So what do you say when you're judging someone else?
I witness my judgment without judgment, step one. I honor the wound. Okay, oh, I'm judging them because I'm feeling insecure. I'm judging them because they're triggering something, yeah. Right? And then I continue on the journey of the judgment detox, which, you know, just releasing and forgiving and seeing someone for the first time, choosing to see them through the lens of love. It's a fabulous book.
See them through a lens of love, yeah.
Yeah.
Get that book too. What is you think is your greatest accomplishment? In 40 years of life.
My greatest accomplishment in 39 years, 2 weeks away from 40. Don't age me. I can't believe I'm 40. Oh, my God. So my greatest accomplishment is the freedom I'm feeling right now, today, here with you, is my greatest accomplishment. Mm. My recovering from trauma is my greatest accomplishment. Wow. It will be the best contribution I can give to the world. Wow. I am going to help people because even just being in this state of freedom will help people watching because they will see what they are capable of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's powerful. And do you feel like you'll be able to make a bigger impact in the world by being a mother or?
I've already, yeah. So I've noticed myself in my talks, I would always have a really good boundary, which you have to have, as you know, when we do the work we do, because if I'm going to get up and answer questions, people, a lot of my audience is like, you know, coming up being like, I have a brain injury or I'm suicidal or, yeah. You know, and I have to hold them in their transformation, but not take it on. Mm-hmm. But as a mother now, I don't feel that I'm taking it on, but I have a way deeper level of compassion for people that I never had before.
Because you're experiencing all
I'm
this
I'm seeing
stuff.
Their innocent child in them.
Wow.
I don't see them as an adult who hasn't taken care of themselves or as an adult who's done stupid things. I see them as a wounded child. And all I want to do is just hold them into love. And that's, I mean, even at one of my talks, this one woman was so wounded. And I actually went as far as asking her to come up so I could just hug her. And that is so against everything I've ever done in my career.
Why?
I would never like touch someone or, you know, have it. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't hug somebody like casually,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I held her like an ama hug. You know what I mean? I was like, this is, and I kept holding her and I said, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe. And I didn't know what came over me. The other thing that's happening is I'm becoming more unapologetic about my mediumship. So we're all mediums. Mm. We all have the ability to listen to spirit and let, but I can, you know, I've throughout my life have always heard messages and, you know, now I'm just like giving messages to people. Yeah, like, and I always have channeled throughout my talking, but now where normally I would say, you know, okay, this is the guidance. If I'm hearing it as a guide, I'll say, what I'm hearing for you is this. Mm, and I'll deliver it in a different way.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So people can receive it. Not if they don't believe in some type of medium stuff, they can receive
Sometimes
it.
I'll just tell them, like, I think, you know, your grandmother is telling
me
something.
Tim's telling you this, yeah.
Sometimes, not always.
I've never had someone who calls himself a medium that does this practice on the show. I've been pitched, like, different mediums to come on, and I've always been kind of resistant, but lately, I'm like, you know what? I think it'd be a fun experience
for me
to.
Oh, yeah, you should have someone.
Is there someone that you think is like the best at what they do?
There's so many. I mean, let's talk offline because I could sit here and tell you six different names and I don't want to offend anybody out there. I know a lot of mediums.
Sure.
I don't want that one being like, why didn't you say me on Lewis House? So I'll give you some suggestions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
They're all good, though.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
What do you think is missing from you to get to the next level in your life, whatever that looks like for you? What's missing?
There's a little bit more trauma work that I've got to face.
Mm.
It's not missing though. It's not like it's in perfect time.
Around what? What's the trauma around?
Just a lot of the sexual trauma, the shame around the sexual trauma.
Yeah, because you talked about it on our show a couple years ago. And I know you've been doing a lot of work over the last few years with it, but do you feel like you're not fully healed with those things yet? I don't think I am either. Even though I talk about it for the last six years.
You're more healed than ever before, but every
I'm at peace a lot about
work.
It, but there's still little triggers.
Yeah, EMDR.
Yeah, so I keep hearing that.
I really recommend it to you.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah.
Where do you think you'll be once you have that final healing?
Freedom is my end game, right? I hope to live for a long, long time feeling free. You know, I did talk with Deepak Chopra yesterday and I was on the plane with him coming here and we were chatting about, you know, I was like, do you feel triggered or traumatized? You know, he's like, not at all.
With
I'm happy
nothing.
All the time. And it's because of his practice. It's because of his devotion to his practice. I'm getting closer and closer to that. It doesn't mean I'll be enlightened. It doesn't mean I'll have bad experience. I won't have bad experiences. It doesn't mean I won't be a human, but that I can feel free. Even when things are tough.
What do you think it is that he has or people like him have that allow them to have zero connection to or not allow the ego to affect them in a triggering way, in a reactive, defensive way, guarded, mm-hmm. when maybe something bad happens to him? Maybe a business deal goes down.
He's the person who grew up being taught that the divine is the direction, that, you know, God was the... I don't want to use language that's not his, but right. He had a very spiritual upbringing, so it was a foundational experience for him, and he's devoted his life to being at ease and meditate. He's up very early, meditates for 2 hours, I think, in the morning. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's his devotion and commitment that's let him be that way.
Isn't it amazing that when I am consistent with my meditation practice, I feel like I'm unstoppable? Like, the longer I meditate, I feel like I see, it's like the Matrix. You'll see someone saying something to you,
and
see
exactly
someone cut
what you
off.
Need. You become a super attractor.
Like, oh,
this
wow.
is what the whole book is about, baby. Yeah. It's that the more we practice being in alignment, yeah. the more that unstoppable experience occurs.
Yeah.
But when we are just living out of alignment, we feel out of alignment.
That's so it.
Things don't work.
That's it.
We're pushing.
What do you think is missing, from your point of view, as a friend of me, what's missing in my life to help me attract more of good things that I want in my
life? I think
life.
There's a little more trauma work to do. I can feel it, and you've said it a few times.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to hold your hand while I say this, because yeah. I love you so much, and I will help you if you need any okay. guidance and support, just to be listen and be there for you, because you have the potential for that same freedom that I'm talking about now. We yeah. all do, but particularly yeah. you're right there, but there's some there's shame, and there's places to go to that I think you're ready to go now.
Yeah.
And that it hasn't been, there's been no step along the way that's been an accident. It's all been perfect order for you, and it's all been unfolding perfectly.
Yeah.
And, you know, humbling moments and difficult times mm-hmm. and things that come up only to get you to the place where you're ready to crack open more yeah. and face some of the darkest stuff.
Right.
And you need to do that with a facilitator that you trust,
mm-hmm.
Someone that you feel safe with, and someone that will really give you that, hold that space for you to go to the places that scare you.
Mm. Sounds good. I'm in.
Because you're doing really big shit in the world, yeah. you know, big stuff, big work. And it's going to be massive the more free you become.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm excited to continue to work.
And I'm really proud of you, because the fact that you even asked that question is so major, because it means you're willing.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm so proud. I love you so much.
Thank you. I love you. Yeah. And you said the first step is willingness. And what? You said willingness is the key for something before in one of our interviews.
Willingness is the catalyst for change, because yeah. the moment that we become willing, it's like we invite the next right action.
Yeah.
We invite God into our life to show us where to go and what to do. The willingness that you've developed over your life over the last 36 years got you into this seat right now with me while yeah. we're talking about things that we've both been through, for you to say what's next, and for me to honestly and authentically say, this is what I think is next.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so
I trust you. I trust you.
That's your willingness.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode and it inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a full rundown of today's episode with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me personally, as well as ad-free listening, then make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Share this with a friend on social media and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Let me know what you enjoyed about this episode in that review. I really love hearing feedback from you, and it helps us figure out how we can support and serve you moving forward. And I want to remind you, if no one has told you lately, that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. Capella University's game-changing FlexPath format helps you learn at your own pace and fit earning a degree into your life.
From before you enroll to after you graduate, you'll be supported by people who are invested in your success so you can pursue your goals, knowing that help is available if you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.